The following program may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
It's the Saturday Morning Cereal.
They're great.
What's your emergency?
I wish we had some Cap'n Crunch.
Death waited in the dark at the hands of a man they called the Night Stalker.
Always have to be Lucky Charms.
Yahoo! I'm cooking!
Theodore Robert Bundy, you are charged 2 counts burglary, 2 counts murder in the first degree, 3 counts attempted murder in the first degree.
I'll plead not guilty right now.
The refrigerator where Jeffrey Dahmer kept body parts.
They're magically delicious.
I am prepared to die if you say it is necessary.
Recognize me, damn it!
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Silly rabbit.
True crime more popular than just slinging jokes these days.
That's apparently.
Apparently we're finding out with a Saturday Morning Cereal. Jackson gives you nightmares and you ask for more.
You do. They really do.
I know.
Like, there was 1 week since we started this. I think we started Saturday Morning Cereal like back in February.
Sounds right.
And we missed 1 week and we got so many reviews that were very nice reviews, but they were also like, bring back Saturday Morning Cereal. Mm-hmm. I'm like, guys, thank you for the positive reviews. We appreciate it. But it's good to know that you're only listening for this.
You're giving Jackson more work.
I love it. but I love doing this one.
You'd be doing this anyways.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like I act like it's such a big burden and that I do so much research, which I do a lot of research on these things. But I'd be researching these things anyway. This is how I relax.
How is today's story? Because the one you told us last time really messed with me.
Really brutal. This one, there are some messy elements. What I'm going to say about this one is that it is a local story, and it didn't happen that long ago. So if you know anyone affected by the Lafferty brothers, then this might not be the one for you.
Okay.
That might be the triggering event. This takes place in Utah County, down in Highland. So if you're close to the situation and you don't want to relive what happened, I would recommend not listening to this one. I don't think it's particularly brutal. Not the way that, like, Mary Vincent's story was brutal. But we will get into the manner of death and all that as well.
How long ago are we talking about?
1984.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, really not that long ago.
No.
I mean, I guess that's, like, coming up on 35 years ago, but...
A young 35 years ago.
That's not that long ago.
That was the
year
John was
born. Not that long ago.
All right, Jackson.
All right, real quick, I want to go over where I got my sources. I just Googled like infamous Utah killers or cases. I got a whole list of them from KSL. So
that's not comforting.
I know.
I got a whole list.
Tons. A whole list. Oh, did you know? I actually read an article yesterday just doing my research. I don't remember which one it was. I read a lot of articles yesterday. But one of them said that per capita, we have more violent murderers in Salt Lake City. We were number 9 in the country.
Shut up.
Really?
Yeah, Utah was.
Huh.
Utah per capita has more violent murderers than like most other places.
No,
we're in
kidding.
The top 10. Top 10?
Utah!
It is true though. Like,
we should celebrate that.
Oh. Right? Oh, we don't.
Whatever.
Okay.
Utah. People working together. Mm-hmm. So shout out KSL for that one. Fox 13 also had a really good, interesting, recent story about them that we'll get into later. I got most of my info from a new podcast that I found just for this case called Bloody Murder. It's out of Australia, and they usually do Australian true crime, but one of their Patreon supporters had asked them to do this one. They did such a good job. It's great. Bloody Murder podcast is what it's called, episode 110.
Okay.
So if you want to listen to that. And then also this story was covered in the 2003 book, John Krakauer book, Under the Banner of Heaven, which,
Oh, it's that story.
The Lafferty Brothers?
Is it based off the story of Under the Banner of Heaven?
One of them, yeah. Because doesn't Under the Banner of Heaven cover a lot of different offshoots?
Yeah.
Like a fundamentalist Mormonism? Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's one of the stories in Under the Banner of Heaven.
Very cool.
Which, by the way, is being turned into a movie. As it was announced 2011, Ron Howard directing, Dustin Lance Black writing it.
When I moved here to Utah, I cannot tell you how many people said, "Oh, make sure you read Under the Banner of Heaven."
Yeah,
and you're like, no, that's the last thing I want to read.
No, stop.
That's what I was afraid of. I was afraid that you would maybe read this book, So I asked you last night, do you know anything about the Lafferty brothers? And you're like, nope, nothing. Nope. I'm like, great.
Yeah.
So this will be somewhat fresh to you. And if it ends up not being fresh, shut up and pretend it is.
You got it.
Thanks, man. All right. Our story starts in Payson, Utah in the 1940s. Dan and Ron Lafferty are the two eldest children of eight in the Lafferty family. Ron is the oldest. Dan is the second oldest. Now, they grew up in a crazy abusive household. It was like, I'm not going to get into all of the things that happened, but I'll give you some of the highlights. It was bad. Their father, Watson Lafferty Sr., beat his wife Claudine on a nearly daily basis and usually in front of the kids. Ugh. One day, after a particularly severe beating of Claudine, he took a baseball bat and beat the family dog to death. So this guy is really killing it, really doing great job. Yeah, he's a really bad guy, really horrible. Now, Ron, the oldest son, the oldest Lafferty brother, was very, very close to his mother. And later in interviews, talked about how he fantasized about killing his dad. Sure. He's just like, every time he hit her, I wanted to kill the guy. Just so that his mom could stop getting hit. And because Ron was so close with his mom, that put a big target on his back. So one day, I guess, Watson Sr. comes in and just out of the blue just knocks Ron to the ground. Just knocks him right out, gets on top of him, towers over him, looks down at him and says, points at his mom and says, that one's mine or she's mine. Back off, basically. So, like, won't even let the mother have a relationship with her children because he's such a controlling monster. Mm-hmm. Now, believe it or not, Watson Sr. had some control issues.
What?
I know. He was a fanatic, and he taught his children to completely distrust every facet of the system. So don't trust politics. Don't trust the law. Don't trust police. Don't trust doctors. Ron and Dan eventually would go on to claim that their father once had a hernia that was so bad you could physically hear his guts sloshing around in his belly.
Gross.
And like, because he did not believe in doctors, because he thought that doctors were charlatans, I guess, Watson Sr. would take his hand and he would just rearrange his guts himself.
No.
He was a chiropractor, man. He knows what he's doing. He knows where a spleen should go.
No.
So yeah, he would just rearrange his innards.
Sure.
Bare hands. No big deal. And it wasn't just himself that he wouldn't let go to the doctor. One time, one of the sons, not Ron or Dan, but one of their brothers, accidentally shot himself in the stomach with an arrow. And his dad punished him by making him sleep overnight with an arrow wound in the stomach before he would take him to the doctor, because that was his punishment for breaking the Sabbath.
That can kill you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, how about this one? One of his daughters ended up getting appendicitis, and he made her live through it. And would not take her to the doctor until her appendix had burst.
Oh.
Because he decided to treat appendicitis with prayer.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Crazy. Yeah. Crazy, crazy, crazy. I also wanted to stop here and say that this story does talk about a fundamentalist LDS offshoot. And we're going to talk a lot about this. What I'm saying has nothing to do with the modern LDS church. This is an offshoot of fundamentalists, not unlike the FLDS church.
Right.
You know, like, it's a completely separate group. So they might have snatched some of the teachings of the LDS church, but it has nothing to do with the LDS church whatsoever. And I also think that you should be able to believe whatever you want, unless that is putting your children in danger.
Yeah.
And prayer healing puts your children in danger. You need to take your kids to go see a doctor.
Appendicitis.
Yeah. Watson Sr. by the way ends up, I didn't put this in the story, but since we're here, Watson Sr. ends up dying from untreated diabetes because he didn't go to the doctor. Anyway, so like I said, his distrust of the establishment wasn't just about medical, it was about the government and women. Like, he thought all women were evil, liars, manipulative. So He really instilled all of this into his sons.
Okay.
Like, he really taught them to be sort of survivalists, naturalists, fanatics, and like, scary religious. And so this is the household that these two men grew up in. Now, at age 17, Ron claims that after helping a neighbor bring in hay, he was taking a nap on the couch. Watson, or one of the brothers, comes running in and says, Ron, you need to come out and help us pluck chickens. He just flat out said no. no. Watson Sr. doesn't like this. So Watson Sr. comes in, like, gets him up off the couch and tells him that they're going to have a fist fight. So Ron knocks him in the face, and Ron claims, and I don't know if this is true, but Ron claims that Watson Sr. turns on his heels and starts screaming, "Mother! Mother! Mother!" Like, crying for his mommy because his son hit him in the face.
He fought back.
Yeah, and they never have a fight after that. They never get into an argument after age 17 because Ron put him in his place.
Yep.
Turns out big old bullies just need to get put in their place sometimes. Now, I don't know how much of that is actually true, but that's what Ron claims happened. Ron, like I said, Ron and his brothers would go on to adopt a lot of the traits that their father instilled in them. Ron ended up going on after he graduated from high school. He graduated top of his class, by the way. Ron served a mission in Florida, and he was a great, great missionary. He went out and he brought 50 new members into the LDS church, which is crazy because the average at the time for a 2-year mission was 2 members. So real convincing kind of guy, real smooth, real charming. He met a woman out there. I didn't put her name in the beginning, but it goes on to say it later. I think her name's Diana, but there are a lot of names in this one. But he met a woman out there, and he brought her back with him. They ended up getting married and having 6 kids. And he ended up serving like a lot of really high callings in the LDS church. So I think he served as a bishop for a little while. He also served on the Highland City Council for a little while. So real upstanding member of the community for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, it sounds
from
like
the outside looking in. Considering his background, not doing too shabby. His younger brother Dan served a mission in Scotland. He met a divorcee with 2 kids. They got married, ended up having 4 more. Dan, when he got back from his missions, ends up taking over Watson Sr.'s chiropractic business while Watson Sr. goes on a mission. So he goes on like the senior missions.
But he died of diabetes. Same guy.
Yeah, okay, eventually. Okay, gotcha. This is before he dies. I just wanted to throw that little fun tidbit.
Throwing that little fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he ends up taking over the chiropractor business. Dan, not as well adjusted to public life as Ron, I would say, because he's regularly seen around town just like spouting these crazy religious beliefs, extreme religious and political beliefs. It got so bad that this all stems from his father's distrust of the establishment. It got so bad that he starts refusing to pay any fees or taxes. So he won't pay any licensing fees. He even cuts up his driver's license because he doesn't want anyone telling him what to do. He refuses to pay for speeding tickets. He doesn't pay his taxes because he thinks that these are all works of the devil. One of my favorite stories about Dan is that Dan ends up running for sheriff, and he's not doing too bad. He's actually kind of a popular candidate, but he ends up getting disqualified because he refused to pay the application fee.
Oh my God.
The application fee was wrong and refused to pay it out of principle. He didn't like people telling him what to do, and he didn't like spending his money. He was a real cheap one. I'm reading a lot about Dan, and I'm thinking a lot about Josh Powell and just how cheap and disgusting Josh Powell was at every turn. Dan, same mold, basically. Dan brought his Scottish wife back with him, Meredith, and he refused to let her communicate with anybody if he was not present. So he's super controlling, super abusive. He was kind of just like a spitting image of his father.
Yeah.
It got so bad at home that instead of buying baby food, remember, he's crazy cheap. Instead of buying baby food, he would chew up food of his own.
No.
And he would baby bird it into his kids' mouths.
Oh, my gosh.
Who does that?
I know. Isn't that messed up?
Disgusting.
Yeah. So that's how cheap and controlling we're talking about here. He wouldn't go get baby food. He baby birded things into their little mouths. He also believed that drinking his own urine was a great way to strengthen the body.
Yep.
And told everybody he could to drink their own urine. So it gets really bad, and the wives are in contact. So Ron and Dan's wives are each talking to each other. And Ron's wife says, "You've got to go talk to Dan. It is getting so bad over there. I'm worried about his wife. I'm worried about his family." And remember, at this time, Ron is like an upstanding, just like church-going man, just like, sure, abusive, but, like, not out of character for the 70s.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, it was obviously not right, but not unheard of to be just like a controlling and abusive to your family. Like, it just sort of happened.
And compared to what his brother was doing.
Right. Yeah. Compared to his brother was like, it got really bad.
Yeah.
So Ron's wife told him to go have a talk with Dan about his beliefs, and he needs to tell Dan to straighten up. Because even Watson Sr. had to come back from his mission early because Dan had almost run their chiropractic business into the ground because he wasn't paying the taxes. So the government was threatening to take it. Watson Sr. had to come back early from his mission. We must know how much Watson Sr. loved getting interrupted by his children.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, he just loved it. So Ron goes over to have this conversation with Dan. And it ends up not going super great. Because instead of convincing Dan to lighten up, Dan ends up convincing Ron to start a small cult with him.
So he went over there. Oh, I was, man, like, listen, you need to be cooler. You're like, you're really messing up in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you're ruining your family life. You're worrying my wife. You're extremely cheap. Mm-hmm. We need to get these issues sorted out.
Right.
Let's start a cult.
And Dan's like, counterpoint, let's start a cult. They want to start a fanatic LDS offshoot because they start to believe that the church abandoned a lot of their original beliefs and teachings in order to gain more mainstream popularity, which is what every fundamentalist group always says, yeah, right? So they start believing things like they don't have to put fuel in their car because if they just pray, the car will go anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot cheaper in this climate. You right? know what I mean?
Not He's like, idea. No. Let me drive.
Yeah. No, I got this. So, and they basically Dan has Ron under his finger, and Dan ends up being able to manipulate Ron into doing whatever he wants him to do. Crazy old man Watson Sr., he's back from his mission because he had to take over the practice. He gets in touch with Dan and is furious. And Dan's just like, no, everything's fine. You see, like, I'm a prophet. And instead of going along with it, Watson Sr. has him exorcised. He performs an exorcism on his own son.
So he says, I'll see you're crazy.
And I'll raise you.
Right, okay.
Some more crazy.
Just want to make sure I'm with you here.
Yeah. So when Dan goes to his father and says, hey, this is what me and Ron believe, and this is what we're practicing, his dad pins him down to the ground and performs an exorcism. It didn't work. And, like, honestly, I really wish it had because Dan's cuckoo. So by 1982... Dan has fully lost it, and he tries to marry a second wife, but not just any old second wife, his 14-year-old stepdaughter,
no!
whom he raised since he brought back from Scotland. So Dan ends up getting excommunicated by the LDS Church in 1982, but he did eventually take a second spiritual wife. You know, like, they can't get legally married, so they're spiritually married. This was a woman from Romania who spoke absolutely no English. Mm. So, you know, couldn't really agree to a whole
lot.
There
you go.
All right. So Dan and Ron have these extremist beliefs. They're kind of just a two-man army at this point. They have friends, but nobody that, like, really believes in what they believe in. And that's when they eventually join up with another fundamentalist LDS group called the School of Prophets. The School of Prophets was started in the 60s by a fundamentalist named Robert Crossfield. And he wrote what he calls the Book of Onassis. He believes that he's a prophet. He got revelations from God. Those revelations were written down, and it was an addition to the Book of Mormon called the Book of Onassis. And and again, it goes back to the whole, we abandoned all of our beliefs so that we could get statehood, and what has our church become, and we're going to get back to we're going to make Mormonism great again, basically, that general attitude. And Dan and Ron are like, this sounds great. We're going to join up with these guys. So Dan and Ron end up joining the School of Prophets. So Matilda is the name of Dan's wife. So Matilda is the Scottish wife of Dan. And she starts to, like, revolt. And she's just like, you try marrying my daughter. You brought in the second wife. I'm so far away from home. I cannot do this anymore. Because Dan, again, fully lost it at this point. He is homeschooling his kids under the Book of Onassis. He is running their house as a self-sustaining house. The only electricity allowed in the house was for one refrigerator. And his wife was forced to milk everything and pluck everything. Geez. Like, run the fields and run the house and homeschool the kids. Meanwhile, he's sitting there praying and having revelations. Because he's crazy. Mm-hmm. If anyone's just like, I had revelations from God, they're never cool looking. They look like they're about to kidnap Elizabeth Smart is right. What they look like to me. And like that's really what he went for. That. He went real hard into that look. Stop cutting his hair. Stop cutting his beard. They basically became homesteaders. Like real, real classic culty stuff. Mm-hmm. So Dan's wife, Matilda, ends up advocating, actually going up to her husband and saying that he should get more wives. Why not? Why stop at just the two of us? Get some more wives. Get all
about
the
me.
Wives you want. Because she's sick of running the farm by herself. But really, in the back of her mind, what she was thinking is that if he ends up getting more wives, then I'll be able to escape out the back, and no one's going to have to worry about
it. That's a really good plan.
Yeah, so that was her whole thought. So meanwhile, over at Ron's house. So that's what Dan's been up to. We need to get back to Ron, because remember, now he's in on this crazy, and he's part of the School of Prophets as well. Ron's home, Ron's wife starts putting up, she doesn't go along with any of this. So while Matilda's plan is to go along with it until she can get away, Ron's wife is just straight up saying, no, I'm not dealing with any of this. So she's like, you're not getting another wife, we're not doing this whole sustainable living thing. And if you keep pressing me, I'm going to leave you. And he keeps pressing her, and she left him. She rounds up her six kids. She moves back home to Florida, where they had met while he was on his mission.
Wow.
Just got right out of there. And he's furious. Now, this is really... So Dan is already crazy. His wife leaving is really what leads Ron to go bananas. He ends up sitting him. So they have a little house in Orem that they refer to as the farm. And he ends up sitting by himself most days, writing what he believed would eventually become scripture. He believes that he's a prophet. He believes he's having these revelations. He's writing scripture. You know, regular stuff. That's what I do on Saturdays.
Right, exactly.
Just writing some scripture. And one day he tells his brothers that he has a revelation from God that his ex-wife was actually married to Satan in a previous life. And and so, yeah, it ends up getting, Ron tells his younger brother, Alan. So this is a brother that we haven't talked about before, but Ron tells his younger brother, Alan, that his wife, Brenda, so his sister-in-law, Brenda better stop talking to his ex-wife, Diana. Ron tells, because Ron really believes in his head that it was Brenda's big mouth that ended up convincing Diana to leave.
Oh.
Because here's the thing. Brenda is a badass. Brenda is not playing games. Brenda met Alan at BYU. She is a loudmouth, outspoken journalist. She was like well known at the time for like breaking big stories and not caring about the repercussions. She was hardcore. So yeah, she had absolutely no problem looking at Ron and Dan in their stupid faces and saying, "You're not prophets. Stop talking about it. Yeah. You're not prophets." And so in Ron's mind, he believes that Brenda is the reason that his wife ended up leaving him, because she gave her the strength to be able to do that. And Ron ends up blaming three people for his wife leaving. Brenda.
Right.
And by the way, he hates Brenda, but he hates Brenda's one-year-old daughter even more, because
he
knows.
She's one.
I know, but he's convinced that because she's being raised by a loud woman, she will become a loud woman. So she's just a loud woman in training.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something about the Lafferty boys. They don't like loud women. They're not fans. So he blames Brenda for his wife leaving. He also blames the stake president who oversaw his excommunication. You know, because it's the LDS Church's fault that you're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with you.
Nope. And he also blames the Relief Society president at the time, because the Relief Society president's actually the one that took Diana in after she had originally left and got her back on her feet so she could get to Florida.
Got it.
So he blames these three people. This is why all these bad things are happening in his life.
So he has created an enemies list, is what you're
saying. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There's a tipping point. In March of 84, Ron wrote himself a new revelation. It's called the Removal Revelation.
Oh.
And he claims that God came to him and commanded him to kill Brenda, her baby, the stake president, and the Relief Society president. He says that God claimed that those four people were getting in the way of his work, and that the School of Prophets couldn't continue doing good work until those four people were out of the way. And he takes his revelation over to the School of Prophets, and he announces what's happening, and the School of Prophets are like, ugh. And they were like, listen, you're too crazy for us.
You're telling me even they now.
Even the School of Prophets, okay, who are already pretty bonkers on their own, mm-hmm, were not impressed by this. So it's up to Ron and his brother to do this. Ron and Dan.
So Dan said, you know what?
I believe this.
I believe you.
Sure, buddy.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I got your back.
You're a bird, I'm a bird.
Exactly.
Blood's thicker than water.
Sure.
You're a bird, I'm a bird.
Don't. That's my thing.
So, Pioneer Day, 1984. So that was in March of 1984. They wait 4 months. Pioneer Day, 1984. Dan and Ron went to fulfill their revelation. They drove themselves down to Alan and Brenda's apartment with a bunch of guns and a pair of knives. They've got two other buddies with them, but their buddies were under the assumption that they were hanging out in Salt Lake for the day. So their buddies were just, they didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
So like, hey, you want to go hang out in Salt Lake? Yeah.
Yeah, no
get
problem.
Some chicken wings,
yeah,
maybe?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's Pioneer Day.
Uh-huh.
Go down and have a celebration. There's probably a parade. So the four of them head down to Highland, where Brenda and Alan live, in a duplex. And Dan gets out of the car. He knocks on the door. Nobody ends up answering. So Dan gets back in. They turn around. And then they're like, I just feel like we got to go back. I'm sorry. Ron knocks on the door the first time, comes back. And then they're on their way down. And Dan's like, no, we got to turn around. I just have this bad feeling we got to go back. Because what the brothers have told the other two guys in the car is that they're stopping by Allen's to pick up a hunting rifle. Mm. Even though neither of them had hunted in a long time. So the guys kind of thought something was weird, but they were like, well, they're just going to their brother's house, whatever. So they turn around. This time, Dan gets out of the car. Dan knocks on the door, and Brenda answers. He pushes her into the house, and the three men in the car start hearing screaming and fights. So that's when Ron gets out of the car and runs in. Now, the other two guys claim that all they hear is just screaming from the baby and from Brenda. And yeah, they're just screaming, 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 don't hurt my baby, don't hurt my baby. And then complete silence fell. A couple minutes later, Dan and Ron come back out, and they're covered in blood. And they decide that they need to finish the revelation. So they start driving on over to the Relief Society president's house. No one was home. So they were just like, all right, well, I guess we're giving up on this one. And they drive next to the stake president's home. And the problem with that one is they missed the exit. And they missed the exit, and they're like, it's not worth turning around. So they abandon their plan for the revelation. You know how revelations work.
Yeah.
they just decided to go to Wendover instead. They're like, all right, we killed a couple people. And at this point, the brothers don't actually know what happened, the two guys in the car with the brothers don't know what happened. But they've got a pretty good idea.
Yeah. I would assume so.
So they came out covered in blood.
Yeah.
So they're driving out to Wendover, and Ron takes a knife out of his pocket and starts, like, hitting his knee with the handle. And he's like, I killed the beep. I killed her. I can't believe I killed her. And is, like, stoked that he killed this woman and fulfilled God's revelation.
Uh-huh.
And then he turns to Dan, hands Dan the knife, and says, thank you, brother, for doing the baby. I don't think I would have had the strength.
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's bad. Police end up on scene after Alan discovers the bodies, which is just the most horrifying thing.
Yeah.
His brother.
Yeah. And Alan immediately is just like, I'm pretty sure my brother's had something to do with this. But what Alan came home to, like, because they had beaten Brenda till she was unconscious. They wrapped a vacuum cord around her neck until she fell limp. And then they slit her throat so bad she was almost decapitated.
Oh, jeez.
So, and then Ron did all that, and then Dan went in and sliced the baby's throat. Ugh. So, just disgusting. Horrifying. So, the police are on the hunt for him, and they're on their way to Evanston, to Wendover. And they end up getting a little apartment out there. Like, I think it must have been like a short-term stay, like a hotel almost. They got cleaned up, they took off their clothes, and they went out for a meal, and then fell asleep. While the brothers were sleeping, the other two guys in the car are like, crap, crap, crap. Now we're part of this. We need to get out of here.
Yeah.
So they get in the van and they take off. They notice that the knife that Ron was holding in the back seat is still in the back seat. So they wrap it up in a towel, throw it out into the salt flats. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's what you do.
I don't know. In their defense, you're just trying to get out of there. You see the murder
weapon.
You don't
want to be
like,
involved. Yep.
Yeah.
Then they make their way up to Idaho Falls. With a trash bag full of Ron and Dan's bloody clothing, they throw it away in a dumpster in Idaho Falls.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they continue to one of their family members' house in Wyoming, where they end up getting arrested.
Okay.
And they kind of just tell their side of the story. They're like, look, we didn't do anything. We didn't sign up for this. We thought we were spending Pioneer Day in Salt Lake. I don't know what to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, one of my favorite parts of the story is that the brothers end up getting arrested in a buffet line in a casino buffet in Reno.
Yes.
They made their way all the way to Reno, and they were caught in a casino buffet. And they end up getting arrested and both charged with the murder of the babies. Dan ends up getting sentenced to life in prison. Ron, however, ends up getting sentenced to death in 1988.
Oh, wow.
So even though Dan was equally culpable, I think what they saw in Ron was that Ron was kind of the mastermind. It was his plan that did it all. By the way,
well, he's the one that did the baby, right?
Dan did the baby. Ron did Brenda, but Ron's the one with the death penalty because it was all his revelation. His, I'm going to put that in quotes. Revelation.
Right.
The other thing that's fun to talk about now is that these two men are still in prison, but they don't speak. One, Ron's on death row, so he can't see Dan. But I guess when they first got arrested, Ron tried to kill Dan in jail, in the Utah County Jail. Ron tried to kill him.
Why?
I don't know,
okay,
man.
Okay, there's no...
Crazy. They're both out of their minds bonkers.
Yeah.
So Ron ends up getting sentenced to death in 1988. He appealed in 1996 and was denied again. Then in 2017, he appealed one more time and claiming that his execution after 25 years on death row would be cruel and unusual punishment. Basically saying, look, I'm an old man. You can't make an old man sit for 25 years because he's one of the longest sitting death row inmates on Utah's death row. Huh. He's been there almost longer than anybody else on death row. He's like, you can't make an old man sit there for 25 years and think about his death every single day. That's cruel and unusual. The Utah Supreme Court's like, no, it's not. Get back on death row, idiot. Yeah. So he's back on death row, and that was in 2017. So it was fairly recently. Now, there are basically two ways that Ron could make a final appeal, one of which would be to appeal to the 10th Circuit Court in Denver, but that could actually totally end up backfiring, because if he appeals the appeal from 2017 in Denver, and the 10th Circuit kicks it back down to Utah, that basically signs his death warrant. Because that means the Utah ruling stands, and the governor has every right to just sign him up.
Gotcha.
Sign him, line him up. And here's the craziest part about all this. I mean, all of it's crazy. Yeah. But one of the craziest parts about all this is that when he got sentenced to death, he was either getting sentenced to death by lethal injection or by firing squad. And in Utah, we did away with the firing squad, but I guess there's a loophole in the law that states that if lethal injection drugs are not available, then you still can get executed by firing squad.
Okay.
So
I saw that in the news, I think.
Yeah. And there's a huge shortage of all these because so many pharmaceutical companies are like, we're not making drugs where you can kill people.
Right.
Sorry. So it turns out that if he does appeal to the 10th Circuit, it gets kicked back to Utah, he could die by firing squad. Like currently,
that is
interesting.
Nuts!
Yeah.
Is that crazy? Even though there was all that big controversy when we killed what's his name,
the last
Gardner.
Guy. Yeah,
Ronald Gardner.
Something Gardner.
Yeah, it was like 2009 or 10 that we killed that guy by firing squad. We're one of like the last states that'll still do that.
Still doing it.
No problem. Not an issue. Real quick, I wasn't gonna do this because I know we're running short on time now. But Dan ends up. There's this woman who reads about Dan's story in John Krakauer's book and ends up kind of falling in love with Dan, even though she's got a husband. And she writes to him in jail. Her and her husband actually go visit him in prison.
What?
So she goes out, she visits him in prison, and Dan is convinced that she's in love with him. Dan is convinced that the husband's in love with him because to Dan, everyone's in love with Dan.
Right.
Dan's crazy. His belief in the afterlife, by the way, is that it's a 1,000-year-old orgy. And, like, it's a 1,000-year orgy. Everyone's just unabashedly having a good time for 1,000 years. That's what heaven is to him. That's what he's convinced. So not only is he a psychopath, he's a sexual psychopath as well, which is always a good mix. A religious sexual psychopath. You know, just run-of-the-mill. But here's the crazy part. This woman and this husband, they have 4 kids. And there's no proof that Dan had anything to do with this, but that woman and her husband end up in a suicide pact. So they force their 2 youngest kids to drink like a suicide Kool-Aid, and their kids end up dying. It's unclear what the older of their 3 kids did. He was 14. And it's unclear whether or not he chose to drink the Kool-Aid or if they made him drink the Kool-Aid, because they did find something where he listed, like, I want my friends to have some of this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it kind of sounded like he was in on it, but the police were not sure. But it doesn't matter. He's 14.
He's a kid.
Yeah. His parents were telling him to kill himself.
Yeah.
And then the mother and father ended up killing themselves as well. So it was this huge suicide pact. Their oldest son, the 19-year-old, who was moved out and engaged, came back and found all their bodies.
Oh, my god!
So there's no way for them to prove that Dan had anything to do with that, but they're pretty sure Dan had something to do with it.
Yeah.
That's the Lafferty Brothers. Still alive. Salt Lake Prison, so if anyone wants to go visit the Lafferty's.
Still doing their thing, huh?
Yeah.
Do they work over at Serving Time Cafe?
No, that's just female inmates.
Okay, so we can't meet them over
there.
We
can't go meet them.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't want them anywhere near my food.
Would you really want to?
Oh, god, no.
No, they're nuts.
No.
Yeah, and Dan's still, like, crazy religious. And, like, spouting all of his sexual afterlife theories. He's nuts.
1,000-year orgy. Thanks for listening to our Saturday morning serial. We do this every other week. It's all part of Just the Mixed Morning Fix podcast. And if you don't mind giving us a review, that'd be great. 5 stars, some nice words. It goes a long way.